care a lot about getting what you want. Plus, you now know that low levels of frustration can fuel you to perform and work harder. That's not the problem. The problem stems from flaws that cause your competitive drive to go off the rails and turn frustration at losing into anger, hatred, or rage. To start figuring out the roots of your hatred of losing, write down a list of what's on the line for you when you trade and how you'll know you've won. For example, let's say your goal is to win praise from your peers, and you'll know that you've won when it's clear they value your trade ideas and listen to what you have to say. Defining the idea of winning respect this way is particularly important because it's easy to have money be the default metric. But around competent traders, P&L alone doesn't buy respect. Whether it's respect or another goal, simply becoming more aware of what's on the line when you trade can potentially decrease tilt for you. You automatically regain a long-term perspective on things you can't attain in one day. You accept the inherent ups and downs, and you don't feel like your social status, confidence, or progress towards your goals rise and fall with every win or loss. Reread this list at the start of every trading day, and use it as a way to frame what winning and losing looks like for the day beyond money. Set your mind to see the results from this new perspective. It's so easy to get caught up in the old way. It's not like you can just instantly contain your competitiveness. Next, increase your focus on winning the non-monetary victories, such as improving your execution, focus, and ability to adapt and find new opportunities. Make improvement in these areas tangible and measurable. For example, clearly define the levels of your focus, much like you did in the mapping your tilt section. Rate yourself daily or multiple times per day. Set goals for duration or average quality. Rate your trading execution or any other qualitative factors in a similar way. The key is taking time to define the measuring stick, get a baseline, and track progress. This way you can see when you've taken steps forward, especially on days you lose money. Without going through these steps, losses can easily overshadow a day of progress and make you feel like you're taking steps backward when that may not be accurate. The difficulty with this is that you're at risk of being biased and inaccurate. Don't worry. Getting perfect measurements is not the point. The goal is to expand the way you define winning in the short term and focus your competitiveness on the action that help you to make money. Trying to win in qualitative ways like this will never replace the priority of winning money. But you're reading this section because your competitiveness is out of control. It causes you to lose more. You can't control whether you win or lose money day to day, but you can control your execution, focus, and improvement. Be competitive towards all the right things. Lastly, this section might fundamentally change how you handle losing in general, not just in trading. Have you hated losing for as long as you can remember? Are there stories that friends and family tell of your absurd overreactions as a kid? If so, then you're retraining habits that are decades old and will take a lot of repetition to correct. You may also be fighting against tilt that has accumulated from some significant losses you've taken over the years. To accelerate the resolution of old accumulated emotion, try using the mental hand history on specific memories where you can still feel your reaction to a loss, even though it occurred years ago. Losing hurts more than winning feels good. When you enter a trade, you not only risk capital, you put your emotional state on the line. Losing hurts, and for many of you, it hurts more than winning feels good. This is a phenomenon first conceptualized by the founding fathers of behavioral economics, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, called prospect theory. You may know Kahneman from his popular book, Thinking Fast and Slow. Prospect theory identified a pattern of decision-making that showed the value derived from winning and losing money doesn't come only from the monetary amount. People value avoiding the pain of losing. And they will, for example, make decisions with lower expected value to avoid it. That includes making risky bets when already down money on the day, week, or month in order to get out of the hole. It also includes choosing guaranteed profit instead of an option that carries a small risk of loss and a high probability to make much more than the guarantee. Losing hurts for all the reasons mentioned in this section. And for many of you, losing also hurts because the feeling of winning doesn't properly counterbalance it. Winning is more of an escape from the torture of losing, rather than something that generates positive emotion on its own. For you, there are more reasons to feel bad about losing than to feel good about winning. Consequently, losing looms larger. you anticipate losses will hit harder, and you make risky or risk-averse decisions to avoid the pain. The first step in breaking this pattern is to know that prospect theory is an observation, not a law of human nature. Yes, this is a pattern that exists, but we're not talking about gravity here. If you believe you can change it, you have that opportunity. In subsequent articles that built on prospect theory, Kahneman and Tversky reinforce the idea that the pattern is based on each person's reference point, by which each of us classifies the value of winning and losing. The advice in this chapter can change your reference point. Losing doesn't have to be more painful than winning feels good. Resolve the reasons why losing hurts so much, and elevate winning so you actually derive more value from it. When you expect to make money, there isn't much reason to celebrate when you do. It's very matter of fact. You did what you were supposed to do, and you focus on making more of it. But making money the right way, through your edge in the market, deserves acknowledgement. I'm not suggesting you throw a party every time you make money. Simply recognize that you demonstrated your own competence and it paid off. Take a moment to feel good about it. You work hard and deserve to end the day with a sense of pride or satisfaction, knowing you did a good job. Tomorrow you'll have to do it again, but you'll go into the day with more confidence and motivation to continue to excel and improve as a trader. Feeling the personal value of winning can seem like a threat, which is part of what takes away the desire to acknowledge it. The assumption is that you stay hungry by starving yourself of satisfaction, but in reality, motivation remains high when you stay committed to your goals. Expecting to make money on every trade. You may think it's absurd that any trader would expect to make money on every trade or from every trading session, but it's more common than you think. Do you experience disbelief when you lose? Do you immediately find yourself doing mental gymnastics to convince yourself that it was possible to avoid the loss? Again, logically, you know that variance would never allow anyone to profit from every trade or every day. Yet as you've read many times in this book, flaws like this overpower logic. One reason this flaw survives is that traders often cling to the idea that one day they'll become so good they'll never lose. Trading does a great job of feeding this belief. When you run hot, the market seems like a printing press minting money into your account. You're elated. You imagine yourself driving a Ferrari to your beach house. Winning that much brings out dreams of how much money you'll make and what you'll do with it. It's similar to someone dreaming of what they would do after they win the lottery. If running hot causes you to have thoughts of making easy money, then you'll hate it when you inevitably lose. It destroys your dream. The resulting anger is your reaction to that fantasy colliding with reality. Although tilt from losing money is what brought you here, the solution to this problem has to include improving how you handle making money. That begins with being acutely aware of when you start getting caught up in those fantasies. In the short term, you don't have full control over whether you win or lose. There are too many factors. Your focus needs to be on executing every trade as well as you can, because that's where your control lies. If you're able to keep your emotions from running too high, you're less likely to overreact on the downside when losses inevitably occur. The less high you get when making money, the less low you fall when losing money. In general, you want to continually work towards attaching more of your emotion to what you can control in the short term and less to what you can't control. You're not becoming robotic or numb to the highs and lows, as people often think they're supposed to. Eventually, it becomes easier and easier to execute your strategy when winning or losing. You have a more balanced perspective and may eventually have some pride for performing well on a day where you lost. Conversely, when you were profitable but made mistakes, the larger account balance doesn't blind you. You remain focused on how to do better tomorrow, and you don't get swept up in the assumption that you'll make money tomorrow just because you did today. Here's a sample mental hand history tracking this problem. 1. What's the problem? If I have a losing trade, I find myself trying to find a way to make the money back quickly. This is almost like a response to a crisis. Quick action needed to make the loss go away as soon as possible. 2. Why does the problem exist? The quicker I make the money back, the quicker I'll be able to trade well again. My strategy makes money, so I can make the money back quickly by trading something else quickly. 3. What is flawed? I'm expecting all of my trades to make money because my overall strategy is profitable. Even if I'm a sniper and take only my best setups, I still won't win every trade. Allowing emotion to cloud my judgment means I take more poor trades that are unlikely to be plus EV. 4. What's the correction? My strategy will incur losses. Thinking all of my trades will be profitable is a fantasy, and expecting this sets me up to fail. 5. What logic confirms that correction? The damage done by a couple of losses is small, but the damage done by getting angry can be significant. Attached to unrealized gains. Your hatred of losing can be tied up with something that was never yours. You enter a position and get excited as you see the price racing towards your target. As much as you've been bitten in the ass before by getting ahead of yourself, emotionally you can't help but get caught up in celebrating. This unrealized profit feels like it's already yours. When the position starts to go against you, anger builds, because it feels like your money is being taken from you. Some may angrily close out the trade, only to see it reverse and ultimately reach the target. Knowing that if you had done nothing and would have hit your target can make your head explode. Other times, you double the position or force entry into another trade, looking to make up for what was lost. Not getting ahead of yourself like this is hard for athletes too, especially when there's a lot on the line. In Super Bowl 51, the Atlanta Falcons gave up a 25-point third-quarter lead to the New England Patriots and lost in overtime. Like an athlete in a game like that, you can't allow your mind to go beyond what's right in front of you. It isn't yours until it's yours. You may be able to correct this problem just by recognizing those instances where you got ahead of yourself and by training your mind to stay focused on the job at hand. You knew you shouldn't do it, but until now, you didn't realize it was causing you to tilt. For some, this advice may be too simple. It's the equivalent of saying, just be present. If you can't control your mind from getting ahead of yourself, there's a reason for it, and you've got to figure that out. I've noticed that my clients tend to need the win and all it represents. In the section Being Too Competitive, I talk about how winning is about more than just the money. In this case, your mind attaches to unrealized gains because you need to win respect, financial security, a career month, etc. As you address the excessive competitiveness, it becomes easier to avoid getting ahead of yourself. Here's a sample mental hand history. 1. What's the problem? When I'm up around 3% in a trade, I feel like I deserve the profit in the trade because I was correct and don't want it to go back down. Once it does start to pull back, I look at the charts a lot more, and I'm almost burned out mentally from staring at them so much. It's like I'm trying to control the price to hit my target. 2. Why does this problem exist? I start to think about the utility of money. I'm up 7 months of rent, and I feel happy about what I'm up, and I don't want to lose it. 3. What's flawed? The trade hasn't hit my target yet. It's not my money yet. I'm getting too attached to unrealized profit and thinking it's already mine. 4. What's the correction? Realized profit is the only profit that matters. 5. What logic confirms that correction? It's true. Mistake tilt. Learning means making mistakes. When you aren't making mistakes, it's because you already know what's correct. Even when you understand their role in learning, however, mistakes can still be frustrating. They're costly. You have goals in trading, and it sucks when your mistakes are the reason you lost money. Being frustrated by mistakes isn't necessarily a problem. It can even be a good thing when it provides the motivation to fix them, and you actually do. What distinguishes mistake tilt as a problem is frustration so intense that it causes you to make more mistakes and have a harder time correcting them. Anger like that shuts down execution in the short term and learning in the long term. One important distinction between mistake tilt and other types of tilt is the reaction to losing. If you're a trader with mistake tilt, you have no problem losing, so long as you made a good decision. You firmly understand that losing is part of the game and don't hate it. But the combination of being wrong and losing money makes your head explode. You immediately feel stupid for being the reason you lost money and replay past mistakes in your head. Suddenly, an avalanche of past mistakes rips through your mind, along with self-critical thoughts like, how stupid can you be not to follow your own rules? You can't get past the mistake. You can't take another loss because it confirms you were wrong. So you stay in the position, maybe even add to it, doubling down on your desire to not be wrong. Other times, the mistake impacts the next trade, and now one mistake has turned into a second. You swear you'll never make that mistake again. But what happens instead? You assume the mistake will be easy to fix, so you don't actually work on it. Or you don't really understand why you keep making the wrong move there, and it happens again and again. The problem has snowballed, leading to short-term damage to your conviction for your next trade idea or hesitation in executing it. You may even abandon ideas that were quite good because your overall confidence has dropped. Part of the frustration behind mistakes is not being certain of what you're going to learn from them. You automatically assume that you just lit money on fire. But if the trading fairy made another appearance and told you that these mistakes would lead to changes or insight that would make you more money in the future, you would instantly feel different. Remember, mistakes are essential to improving as a trader. Think of it this way. If you hate mistakes, you hate improving. Mistake tilt is something you may not even realize you experience, as it's often hidden by more obvious reasons to tilt, like losing, injustice, and revenge. To help identify whether this is a problem for you, ask yourself, why do mistakes make me so angry? Here are some possible reasons. It feels like you missed a great opportunity because of your own incompetence. You erased a day's worth of work with one stupid move. There's no excuse to make such obvious mistakes at this point in your career. It feels like you've taken a step backwards in your progression. You hate what others will likely think of you. You feel like you're standing in the way of reaching your goals and becoming a great trader. Embedded within each of these statements are the common reasons why mistakes cause traders to tilt. Each reason is connected in some way to a fundamental error in their understanding of the learning process and the nature of performance. The remainder of this section breaks them down, making it easier for you to resolve them. When these errors are corrected, it not only means that mistake tilt goes away, but also that you're going to be better at fixing your trading mistakes and will become a stronger trader. By the way, if you read the fear of mistakes section in the last chapter, the themes in the rest of this section will be familiar, but still worth reviewing in the context of tilt. Expecting perfection. Perfection is out there. It can be attained, but only temporarily. The roots of mistake tilt take hold when you're at your peak and believe you've found permanent perfection, a paradise where you never make mistakes and trading is easy. Only forgetting it's an illusion. Perfection is a moving target that for two reasons is impossible to sustain over a large sample. Most obvious is the changing dynamics in the market force you to continually refine your strategy, and thus the definition of perfection changes. Less obvious? Inchworm shows us that it's not possible to have perfect execution for very long. As the bell curve illustrates, there's always variation in your execution. Sure, you can have those days where you're in the zone, spot on with your sense of the market and timing, and making money easily. The problem is that even though rationally you know better, part of you believes that you can have those days every day, for every trade. Deep down, you feel like you figured it out, have unlocked the mysteries of trading, and found a new standard that will allow you to print money. And now, that's the standard you expect. Reaching perfection means you have minted a new A game. Your best has just gotten better, and your definition of perfect rises. To continue to expect perfection means continuing to be perfect while your execution improves and continues to hit new high points. In other words, you have to correctly predict and hit a target that's moving to an unknown destination. That alone is impossible to sustain, but your range has gotten wider, and that makes it even more unlikely you'll remain perfect. Progress at the front end of your inchworm hasn't been matched by improvement from the back end. Traders often expect the opposite. They think perfection eliminates the back end, but that's just not how it works. For some of you, reaching these new heights, whether in execution or profitability, doesn't even come with much satisfaction. You expected it all along, and it doesn't make sense to appreciate something that you expect to happen. Now any mistake, no matter how slight, causes tilt. You either feel neutral about trading perfectly, or you beat yourself senseless at the slightest possibility of a mistake. The best opportunity to correct this problem comes from how you handle the instances when you're at your best and doing great. When you performed at your peak, feel good about it. When you do everything right, you get that pop of adrenaline confirming how spot on you were in, for example, your understanding of the dynamics in the market and your execution. Take a look at how you got there. Reinforce the steps you've taken to get there so you can identify the next things to improve. Knowing how you achieve results strengthens your ability to achieve future results. Plus, if you eliminate weaknesses in your approach to learning and performance, such as distractions, procrastination, or mistake tilt, then you become more efficient when striving for the next peak and can get there faster. But also recognize why you can't expect those same dynamics tomorrow. Gain a more realistic view of the learning process so you can prove why perfection can't be attained all the time. Make sure to mind your inchworm, remembering that the way to take a step forward and reach your next peak is by correcting weaknesses at the back end of your range. Only when your worst has improved can you take steps towards the next peak in your performance. Rather than expect perfection, keep striving for it by continually correcting your mistakes. The perspective in this section was particularly helpful for Roderick, the trader I mentioned in Chapter 4 whose greed was the result of this kind of mistake tilt. Prior to our work together, if Roderick made even a small mistake, he would feel compelled to fix it, often losing more money to cover that mistake. He once lost $58,000 trying to fix a $4,000 mistake. He just couldn't accept it. As a trader whose strategy uses global intermarket relationships, he looks at how different markets or assets move together and affect one another. But he often had a feeling like he'd missed an opportunity, even when his plan wasn't to trade that market on that day. He'd chase and take the other side, only to get slaughtered. Roderick also puts a lot of time into research, and in particular, after days or weekends of intense work, he expected the next day would immediately produce a windfall. When he and I first spoke, we quickly identified that he was expecting to make money from every trade or every day, never miss an opportunity, make more money after putting in a lot of time strengthening his strategy. Taken together, these were signs of a larger expectation of perfection. Interestingly, Roderick's expectation of perfection also extended to his mental game. He was well aware of the mistakes that were caused by his out-of-control emotions, but deep down, he thought that he could crack the code and achieve trading perfection. It didn't make sense to work on his emotions when he believed that one day he'd figure it all out and the emotions would simply disappear. Ironically, this was how he cracked the code to the faulty logic behind his perfection. Roderick thought that he could become so good that essentially he would escape his own humanity and be perfect 100% of the time. The inchworm concept resonated with Roderick, and it was eye-opening to think that he could only truly expect his worst. Of course, that doesn't mean that's what will happen. He just has to earn his best, to aspire towards it, and then work to understand why he fell short and troubleshoot the problem. Also, the idea of improving his back end was something Roderick had never prioritized. These were the key points that got him to accept the cyclical nature of progress. Accepting this cycle finally got him to do the journaling work that he knew he should do for his trades as well as his thoughts and emotions. Journaling quickly raised his awareness and made a big difference in fighting against the rise of tilt. The anger is still there, but the severity of it is much lower. The proof of that is seen in the number of trades he takes per day, down from between 70 to 100 to just 10 to 20 now. And even when he takes a suboptimal trade, he quickly recognizes it and cuts it off, rather than allowing it to snowball. Humbled to accept that he's human, Roderick now also appreciates more of what he's accomplished in his 10 years of trading, which has taken away some of the intensity around his anger. Although during one session, this recognition also made him momentarily feel bad. He said, "I've accomplished all these things, and yet if I had learned these things earlier, I would have been even more successful." I quickly pointed out that this was the expectation of perfection once again clouding his judgment. It's a sneaky bastard. Obvious mistakes. An obvious mistake is, well, obvious, and that's the problem. This wasn't a close decision that if it happened to work out, you wouldn't be certain the trade was bad. No, this mistake is so blatantly obvious and so incredibly stupid that you can barely comprehend it. Sometimes you know in real time that you're about to make a mistake but can't stop yourself. For example, you clearly know the setup isn't right and getting in would be forcing it, but you do it anyway. Taking a trade you know is wrong can be so incomprehensible that you're shocked and ask yourself, why would you do something you know is wrong? It doesn't make any sense. You shut it down for the day, but can't get the mistake out of your head. You can't relax, you don't sleep well, you question your ability to stop these mistakes from happening. It's deflating, and all that negativity carries over to the next trading session, making an obvious mistake more likely to happen again. On the surface, expecting yourself not to make simple errors seems completely reasonable. Why would you do something you obviously know to be wrong? There are two main reasons. One, you're already tilting but don't realize it. For some of you, mistake tilt is the first signal that you're already tilting, or that another emotion, like fear or overconfidence, has compromised your decision-making. 2, autopilot, boredom, fatigue, or another discipline issue has caused your performance level to drop. Either way, your mental and emotional functioning is compromised. The first step in correcting this problem is to change the expectation that you shouldn't make such obvious mistakes. For the rest of your trading career, the errors that occupy your C game remain possible. 3 years from now, your C game will hopefully be significantly better than it is now, and so your definition of an obvious mistake will change too. But at that point, an obvious mistake is still possible. It always is. By changing your expectation, you automatically place a higher priority on showing up prepared, with good energy, emotionally balanced, and ready to correct the mental game leaks that can lead to an obvious mistake. Second, change how you view these mistakes. The mistake is not the mistake. The real mistake is failing to see the rise in emotion or drop in intensity that made the trading error inevitable. Prioritize improving the leak that's causing your mentality to degrade. To do this, focus on recognition and mapping your pattern. You need to be able to spot the rising tide of emotion or the decline downward towards autopilot or boredom. You can't stop what you can't see. The changes to your mental and emotional states must be easily and readily recognizable. Otherwise, making an obvious mistake is your first signal of a problem. Glorifying self-criticism. When trying to reach our goals, we all have moments when we need to coach ourselves. For many of you, this internal dialogue is decidedly self-critical. Perhaps you grew up with parents, coaches, or teachers who motivated you through harshly worded feedback, and that became the voice inside your head. Or perhaps the voice is decidedly yours and has been there for as long as you can remember. Either way, you berate yourself with questions like, "How could I be so stupid? Why can't I just follow my plan and do what I'm supposed to do?" Or you admonish yourself by thinking, "Why the hell didn't you sell? When I follow my rules, I make money. When I don't, I lose money. It couldn't be simpler." If self-criticism is a problem for you, you know exactly what this voice sounds like and what it says. To a certain extent, self-criticism is a useful tool for motivation. The problem is that you believe self-criticism is necessary for your performance, growth, or ability to learn from mistakes. It's not, and it can actually slow or shut down your ability to improve. For most people, it's not an efficient tool for learning and tends to backfire. You get stuck in the spiral of negativity, self-loathing, rumination, lost sleep, and wasted time, energy, and opportunity. And strangely enough, you end up dependent on this internal anger to motivate you to do better. Before long, it becomes a self-perpetuating problem. You have to make mistakes in order to spark that drive. For example, soon after instances of reaching the zone or trading at a high level, you may get a bit cocky, lazy in your focus, or mentally flat. The lack of self-criticism causes a concurrent lack of motivation to keep improving, and you slip backwards. Eventually, you make a mistake that triggers self-criticism, and the cycle repeats. Self-criticism can motivate you, but mistakes are the currency you trade for it. Mistakes ought to be used just as feedback to learn and have nothing to do with your motivation. You don't need self-criticism. You just haven't considered motivating yourself any other way. To make this transition, use a 1-2 combo of reducing the intensity of anger or self-criticism and strengthening your commitment to your goals as a primary source of motivation. Identify and correct the source of your criticism, which often includes flaws in your approach to learning, such as the expectation of perfection or hatred of an obvious mistake. In addition, write down your short and long-term goals and why you're driven to achieve them. Review them regularly, including at the start of every trading session. Then to keep the progress going, you must also correct those instances when overconfidence and discipline issues derail your motivation. Be sure to rectify them so you continue to improve. Then as the cycle of self-criticism starts to unwind, it should become easier for you to be naturally motivated towards your goals. Hindsight bias. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. You're pissed off because you think you could have avoided a mistake if only you had fill in the blank, worked harder, read about a particular piece of news, not ignored a junior trader's idea, you name it. The excuses are endless. At its core, these thoughts are driven by a desire to be better. But usually, the consideration of what lesson you learned is done in more of a fantasy or wish type of way. You assume that it was easy to see the error, when in reality, it wasn't. You don't appreciate that whenever you look back and recognize the mistake, after the trade or at the end of the day, you have more information than you did when you made the decision. After the fact, you have an informational advantage. From that position, you highlight what could have easily altered the outcome, but without really figuring out how you could have made the bet based on that information from the beginning. You shouldn't have listened to the other traders, and instead trusted your gut. You saw the massive opportunity to sell the equity market near the top in 2008, or buy Bitcoin in 2013. You lament the lost money and think about what it would mean to you today. And of course, you beat yourself up for being an idiot, saying, if I adjust. You can even have hindsight on your emotions, knowing you shouldn't have traded out of anger or impatience. Nowhere in your analysis afterwards do you think practically about what it would have taken to do in hindsight what seems easy. Since you're not proactively figuring out how you could have known better, you're not improving, so the cycle will repeat. At some point in the future, you'll say the exact same things as you're saying now about another mistake or missed opportunity. You'll look back with 20/20 vision, wishing that you had made different decisions, and thinking about what a dumbass you are. To correct this problem, you must first realize that you harbor an assumption that at some point you will wake up a genius with an ability to not miss a trade or make a mistake again. You've likely never had that exact conscious thought, but the nature of your thoughts proves you're thinking along these lines at some level. After the trade, you know exactly what happened. Before it, you don't. Equating the two means you believe there's a genius inside of you that will one day emerge and know how to take those trades. Obviously, it doesn't work that way. New knowledge is built on a foundation of the old. After these missed opportunities, the questions you need to answer are along these lines. How could you have made the right trade? What steps would it have taken? What perspective were you missing? What changes to your decision-making process can you make? What improvements to your mental game are required? You need to think proactively about how to be better in the future. Otherwise, you're just wishing that you had the capability to make those trades. Always wanting to be right. Are you the type of trader who has an excuse for every mistake you make? Do you have a litany of reasons to explain why you weren't wrong, such as you were distracted, you can afford the loss, or that late entries sometimes work? These knee-jerk reactions spring to mind instantaneously to convince yourself that you were right. You always have to be right. Heck, you might even be defending yourself right now as you read this section, justifying your desire to always be right. The desire to be right is a worthwhile pursuit, but it must be balanced by an understanding that you have limits, and that being wrong is an eventuality. Ideally, you're insanely driven to be right, while accepting when you're wrong, learning from it, and adjusting. Given you're here, my bet is that you know logically you should have that balanced perspective, but you're instead driven by a desire that you can't control. The key to gaining control of these knee-jerk reactions and adopting the correct perspective is understanding what drives you to always be right. Why do you need to be right? What does it provide? Why can't you be wrong? What does being wrong mean to you? In my experience, the need to be right stems from a confidence problem. Being right is part of your identity. Being wrong is a painful hit to your confidence. You need to be right, like you need food. Without it, you're starving, and it feels like you're losing a part of yourself. So you instantly defend against that happening. An excessive desire to be right was at the root of Franz's tilt problems. The trader from Chapter 2 who wants to make enough money from trading to travel the world with his wife. Unfortunately, his accumulated emotion prevented him from patiently waiting for the infrequent A-plus trades he needed. Instead, he'd force trades and then get back into another trade as soon as possible to make up for his mistake. Due to the severity of his tilt, his mind could completely shut off. We needed to use several tactics to address Franz's problem. He started by creating a clear map of his tilt, taking notes in real time, and spending an hour after each session to review what he found in detail. That post-market routine was particularly helpful to release the accumulated tilt and uncovered a lot of details. This gave Franz greater awareness and prevented some mistakes immediately. But he was still tilting and didn't have a good sense of what he was experiencing when tilt got particularly intense. The academic researcher side of Franz took over, and he decided to video himself talking out loud throughout the session. This practical step gave him invaluable insight into his thought process while tilting. While reviewing the video from a particularly bad trading session, Franz completed a mental hand history based on what he found. That's when a breakthrough happened, and he understood the root of why he had to be right. Here's an excerpt of that mental hand history. 1. What's the problem? There are many ways to react to a loss. My way is to get back into another trade as soon as possible, in order to chase a loss. I enter attack mode, in which respecting my entry criteria and basic trading rules doesn't appear as important anymore. When anger takes over, my judgment is clouded and I become impulsive. 2. Why does the problem exist? I fight back to repair the damage I've done. I want to make amends. I'm telling myself I'm urgently going to make back the money right now because I can't stand the lack of success, the failure, the inability to make my system work. I don't like when things are not working for me, despite my best efforts. I don't accept the loss. I shouldn't be losing. I can't believe I'm losing. Why is this so? If I only could have a win, just a win, I would feel better about myself again. I would stop feeling like I'm failing. I would stop feeling like a loser. Why is this not working? What can I do to make it work? 3. What is flawed? I don't accept criticism or being challenged because I think I'm always right. Trading directly challenges that and makes me feel like my sense of worth is at stake. This is huge for me to realize. I've always had unrealistic expectations about what I was capable of doing. It's as if I should have known better at all times, even in the absence of prior knowledge or any practice. 4. What's the correction? I achieved a PhD and 2 postdoctoral fellowships. I'm capable of achieving whatever goal I fix my mind on, so long as I do it the right way and with the right mentality. Trying to be right all the time is like thinking I have a superpower. Embrace the challenge that trading poses and figure out how to be right in a real way. 5. What logic confirms that correction? Being accurate about my capability is the only way I can turn my dream into a reality. You can see the mixture of anger and confidence at the heart of this issue. Franz's desire to always be right also had a personal aspect beyond trading. That discovery helped him understand why his anger became so intense, and it gave him the opportunity to address the problem in both places, effectively cross-training like an athlete. He also uncovered other factors that could influence his focus, energy, and mood that were subtly undermining his ability to execute and leading to the initial mistakes. Essentially, he was making mistakes and couldn't understand why until he looked closer. The result of all that work is that his tilt has reduced by more than 50%, and he continues to work through the process. Finally, Franz's problems didn't neatly fit into a single category. He also needed to use some of the corrections from the fear of failure section in the prior chapter, as well as to address overconfidence using advice from the upcoming chapter on confidence. If, like Franz, the desire to always be right is a problem for you, refer to the next chapter to get to the core of the problem. Find out how to expand or redefine your identity so you can adopt a more balanced perspective on being right. Injustice tilt. You've been stopped out for the umpteenth time and you're steaming mad. You can't believe how unlucky you got. Stopped out by a tick, only to see the market turn around and hit your profit target. You tilt when you think about what you should have made. The trading gods have cursed you. The market is against you. You don't deserve this, and wonder when you're going to get your fair share of luck. Logic says be patient, and eventually things will turn in your favor. But the scales of justice have gone against you, and you tilt trying to fight against them. As the name implies, injustice tilt is about fairness, equity, and justice. While you already know there is no fairness in trading, that doesn't stop you from having reactions like these. Saying things like, "I can't believe this is happening again, I'm just unlucky." Thinking the market is manipulated or personally out to get you? Blaming losses on bad luck? Being convinced you're doing all the right things, but are always unlucky with your timing? Believing the market owes you after a few losing trades? Trading is complex, highly competitive, and chaotic. You don't operate in a courtroom, neither is it a meritocracy. You know this, and yet you still experience these strong reactions that are out of your control, where you feel like you're getting screwed and owed something. While it may seem as if the only answer is to think in terms of probabilities and not overreact to short-term results, it's clearly not that simple, or this problem would have already been solved. You may have already tried a number of cures. You've read the book Black Swan, you follow your risk management strategy, you've back-tested your system, and you have a sizable sample to prove you have edge. intellectually and conceptually, you understand variance well. But that knowledge is simply not enough to fundamentally change how you react to bad luck. Since not every trader suffers from injustice tilt, there's obviously more to it. We have to look beyond the natural desire for fairness, which is observable even in infants, and examine the biases and flaws that skew our perspective on what's fair and what's not. Let's look at a basic example. You may feel like you're consistently unlucky in the market, and yet the fact that you're reading this book means that you're likely living in a first world country with your basic needs met and have the capital to trade. Have you factored that luck into your perspective? Likely not. And while I'm not suggesting that appreciating this good luck is the antidote to injustice tilt, failing to account for other forms of good luck in trading or elsewhere in your life means that your perspective is skewed. With injustice tilt, there's a similarly skewed perspective that needs to be uncovered. To help you find the flaws or biases causing it, answer these questions with your anger in mind, not what you know logically about fairness. Does it feel like you never get your share of the luck, or that you're always getting screwed? Does it seem as if the money you've lost is being taken from you? In what situations does bad luck really get to you? Are you jealous or resentful of other traders who you think are luckier than you? When variance is really bad, do you wish trading wasn't this way, or that you could somehow control variance? When your actions cause further losses, it's always harder to swallow. This is especially true when you lose control, despite working hard to increase the size of your edge and understand the randomness in the market and distribution of outcomes. While you have no control over luck or variance, take the time to better understand the reasons why bad variance stirs anger, and you can regain command of your execution. Believing you are unlucky. Look beyond how you think you should react to bad luck and be honest about why you get angry. Do you feel like you don't get your fair share of good luck, are cursed, or get more bad luck than you deserve? If so, you may have drawn that conclusion from a long-term research project you've been unknowingly conducting since you started trading. The problem is that your research has been compromised by bad data, and thus your conclusions are wrong. You aren't cursed. You get your share of good luck, and not as much bad luck as it seems. You're just not measuring it correctly. There are two primary errors that cause faulty coding in this way. First, you attribute your mistakes to bad luck. And second, when you have good luck, you attribute those results to skill. These errors bias the scales of trading justice to make variance seem unfair when it's not. The next two figures illustrate this point. Figure 1 represents a theoretical ideal, where your view of variance, your understanding of your skills as a trader, and your assessment of the mistakes you make are accurate. You have a balanced view of fairness. Although theoretical, some are much closer to this view than others. Practically speaking, this means understanding the inevitable outliers, knowing that even the best setups in your system can lose, and focusing more on the big picture, not just the outcome of a few trades. Filtering variance this way allows you to see it more accurately and focus on what you can control. Figure 2 highlights how the two errors I mentioned can alter your perspective on variance and cause injustice tilt. First, if your mistakes were the predominant cause of your losses, but instead you attribute it to bad luck, then some bad luck is added to the scale. Second, if your profits were more likely a result of good luck, but you believe it was solely due to your skill, then some good luck is taken off the scale. You can imagine what happens when this bias plays out repeatedly over time. Inevitably, you believe variance was unfairly against you, or that you were cursed. Consistently attributing good luck to your skill or your mistakes to bad luck overweights the scale on one side, making it seem like variance is against you. Bad luck appears to happen more frequently, and you tilt, believing you're getting screwed, when in actuality, you're mentally screwing yourself. This pattern is further exacerbated by the fact that typically, traders remember bad luck more than good luck, especially under emotional pressure. Remembering and focusing more on bad luck creates a biased perspective for the simple reason that when you add focus to something, you learn it better. So bad luck gets more attention and thus stands out more easily in your mind. Basically, you're really skilled at spotting bad luck and terrible at spotting good luck. To make matters worse, not only does this extra focus on bad luck bias your perspective overall, but when you're under emotional pressure from a drawdown, it's all you remember. A statement such as, "I never get lucky," makes total sense when bad luck is all you see. In that moment, you truly believe that you never experience good luck, something that happens primarily because you're so bad at recognizing it. As chaotic as this problem may seem, you can change your perspective and the way you code results in your mind. Start by improving your ability to spot both positive variants and your mistakes. One idea is to track when you get lucky, in a notebook, Word document, spreadsheet, or whatever works for you. Perhaps you got in and out of a trade at the exact right time to maximize profit. Happened to be off the desk and missed a losing trade you certainly would have taken? Or missed getting stopped out by a tick or two and exiting at your target? Notice these instances and track them. Conversely, whenever you think you were unlucky, stop and evaluate if you made a mistake. At first, the objective is simply to be open to the idea that you might have made a mistake and consider whether or not that is the case. Sometimes bad luck prevents a win. Other times you made a mistake. In the short term, you'll continue to automatically react to losses by assuming you got unlucky or whatever characteristics you identified around this issue. But now, by asking a question, you're disrupting that pattern and beginning to alter the coding of your results and balance your perspective about variance. Lastly, look at your history. Go back through your trading career, perhaps even your personal or professional life outside of trading, and identify instances of good luck that at the time you thought happened more because of your skill than variance. Also look for instances when you thought you were getting screwed, but were either making mistakes or not looking for distinct points of improvement that you could have made. Correcting your biased perspective is easier when you also correct your past biases. You obviously can't change what's happened in the past, but changing how you look at the past provides a more accurate and stable view of the present. Focus more on results than quality. In an industry like trading, results are what matter most, and that will never change. This is also true in places like major professional sports, where the old adage is that no one remembers who finishes second. But in sports recently, there's been an increased emphasis on the process of attaining those results. Coaches understand that to build consistency at the top, more than just a ruthless focus on results is required. Leading coaches across a variety of sports have popularized process-oriented thinking. And within trading, Ray Dalio is an outspoken stalwart of the style. In his popular book, Principles, Dalio says, "Choose your habits well. Habit is probably the most powerful tool in your brain's toolbox." While this isn't a new concept, what may be underappreciated is the extent to which the results are all that matter perspective has to be upgraded to value the process more. Right now, your default reaction when results don't go your way is to feel like you got screwed. When you're in a stronger process or quality-oriented state of mind, you view results from a balanced perspective that can automatically handle bad luck, losses, and even your mistakes with greater ease and less anger. If you're like most traders, however, putting greater emphasis on the process is a general idea that sounds good, but you're not actively training to be more process-oriented, which means that you see this as a perspective that should just be there without any effort, not as one that actually follows a learning process like any other skill. Recognizing progress is easier when you track your progress for process-oriented goals. Daily P&L is easy to see, and your mind is already well-trained to think about it. When you focus on how you're doing in these non-monetary pursuits, you train a process-oriented mentality. In your daily journaling at the end of the trading day, review your progress with process goals, such as reducing tilt, improving execution, or decreasing distractions. With the goal of reduction of tilt, you could pay attention to, for example, a general ability to review lost trades more easily without immediately tilting, reduce frequency in checking your P&L during the trading day, and a sense of accomplishment on a day where you lost money but executed your strategy well. These outcomes signal progress, both in reducing tilt and becoming more process-oriented. You get two benefits from one action. Ultimately, you must get to the point where focusing on signs of progress becomes second nature. Until then, you're still learning this new perspective, and at times you'll tilt because you're focusing too much on results. It's easy to fall back into old habits. Stay focused on training your process orientation until it's automatic. Thinking you know what will happen. Your immediate reaction when you see a position going against you is to believe losing is a foregone conclusion, and the only question is how it will happen this time. You start having thoughts like, "Here we go again," or, "Really? Again?" You sense what's coming and are already pissed off about it before it happens. This pattern typically happens when you're already on a losing streak and have some built-up accumulated tilt. Then these predictions start popping up and create a cycle like this. You predict a loss, and when it comes true, you tell yourself, I knew that was going to happen. This subconsciously fosters the belief that you can actually make accurate predictions, exaggerating your sense of control. Part of the resulting anger from a loss is being pissed off at yourself because you knew it was going to lose, and you didn't close it immediately. Now, tilt starts to snowball. You become so angry that you'll do whatever you can to avoid the loss. Over time, the cycle perpetuates and reinforces the idea that you're cursed, which hypothetically could be true. Thus far in your trading career, you could have had more than your fair share of bad luck. Regardless, that reality doesn't say anything about what kind of luck you will have going forward. You can't know what's to come, but you think you do. And that's the root of the problem, the belief that you know what's going to happen. The mind has the ability to anticipate the future, just as the body does. When your body is moving, it's constantly making predictions so it's prepared. One example of where this prediction goes wrong is when you walk up a flight of stairs without paying attention to how many steps remain. If you anticipate a step that isn't there, you'll practically trip because your body's prediction was wrong. Whether in reference to the body or the mind, a prediction is based solely on the information available at that time. During a drawdown, your mind draws from a pool of data that's skewed towards losing, because that's what's happened recently. Naturally, your mind predicts more losses to come and tilts in anticipation. But the flip side can also occur. When you're on a great run, you assume profits will continue to come your way. For example, when you're in a trade that quickly moves towards your target, you assume it will hit your target. The idea that it would reverse doesn't cross your mind. Either way, when your predictions come to fruition, the belief that you know what's going to happen gets stronger. Then in subsequent drawdowns, tilt becomes more intense because you're even more certain that losses are coming. At the root of this problem is a belief that you can predict the future. Unless you have real psychic power, and then why are you reading this book if you do? Believing that you actually know what's going to happen is an illusion that needs to be corrected in connection to both predicted losses and profits. Make sure to closely map your positive and negative predictions for a trade and the thoughts that confirm your predictions afterward. Seeing them in real time is the only way to correct a flaw that on the surface seems crazy to believe. Hating variance. Underlying the sense of injustice for some of you is a hatred for variance. Deep down, you know that variance is an unextractable reality in trading. You know that there are factors beyond your control, and yet, deep down, there's a part of you that wishes trading were more predictable, or wishes you had more control of your results. You hate how things can seem so unfair. You hate how profits can be eviscerated in seconds. The lack of control makes you crazy. Let's assume that you have actually had worse luck for far longer than the math says is likely. It's completely reasonable to be pissed off. But the question is whether that frustration or anger affects the quality of your performance. Traders with a hatred of variance often end up losing control of their decision-making and execution. Since you can't control variance and can only control how you respond to it, the goal is to build up more mental muscle so you can respond effectively and focus on your execution. Of course, it's hard. Variance is a major reason why trading is so challenging. Assuming that's all true, and many of you already know that it is, what's the wish for more predictability really about? Wishing variance didn't exist in trading is another way of saying, I can't handle the emotion variance causes me, or I can't handle my results being out of my control, or I can't continue to execute properly when I lose in unfair ways. You can't control variance, but you can understand it better. Admittedly, you may have a real deficit in this regard, but you can understand and correct the flaws that variance exposes. Most likely, if variance didn't cause you to tilt, you'd love that it causes other traders to tilt. Jealousy. Jealousy specifically relates to luck when you believe that you aren't getting your fair share of it and are envious of those who you think are. If you think or say to another trader, I wish I had your luck, do you actually have proof that they've had more luck? Or does it just feel that way? Think about the scales of justice from earlier in this section. When you look at other traders, you might falsely assume that they're having good luck when it's actually a result of them being more skilled than you think. You perceive their scale as overweighted to the right, lucky. Plus, you may be discounting the errors that you're making, so in your mind, your scale is overweighted to the left, unlucky, which means that you feel jealous about something that isn't real. Alternatively, maybe this trader really is luckier than you. But even if that's true, what does it mean for you? Not much. You can't control variance, and wishing you had their luck won't make it come true. In its most basic sense, focusing on the fortune of others is a distraction. Unless you're learning something from them that makes you better, you're simply wasting time. But the source of jealousy can also run deeper. Is your comparison isolated to just luck? If not, what are the things do you compare yourself to others about? Your career as a whole? The amount of money they make? The position they may be in terms of title or opportunity? Injustice tilt can be a signal of larger problems, like a sense that your abilities are lacking, your career isn't stacking up to expectations, or a general confidence issue. To start making improvements on the issue of jealousy, answer the following questions. What do others have that you resent or wish you had? What would having it mean for you? What more can you be doing that you aren't already? There's always something, even if it's just being patient. What have you achieved that you haven't celebrated enough? Your answers will give you some direction, so you can focus less on the fortune of others. It's easy to say, don't focus on them, focus on yourself. But if you don't correct the reason why you're compelled to focus on someone else's good fortune, following that edict is difficult at best. Revenge trading. Revenge is common in everyday life, so it's no surprise it also exists in trading. In the market, just as in life, the long-term consequences of seeking revenge often outweigh the short-term satisfaction of achieving it. Of course, when revenge gets triggered, the likelihood that your actions will lead to losses is the last thing on your mind. You're glued to your screen and focused on every tick, driven by a relentless urge to take back what you believe is yours. It's as if you're saying to the market, "Oh no, you're not going to just screw with me and get away with it." There's no thinking, just a pure impulse to make money. Revenge is not irrational. It has a history of contributing to creating laws, unwritten codes of the street, and the unwritten rules that you define as acceptable and unacceptable in trading. So long as the outcomes of your trades follow what you expect to happen, it's all good. You're making money, and there's no reason to want revenge. As soon as you lose money, make a mistake, or get unlucky, the desire for revenge starts to rise. You try to control yourself and not make a big mistake like in the past, but you can only hold on for so long. Eventually, you crack and fly off the rails. Then you wake up wondering, what the hell just happened, and how you could lose control like that. Reacting in a vengeful way is especially surprising when you're not like that in everyday life. But consider how you've reacted in previous competitive arenas in your life. Was a desire for revenge triggered by a particular opponent who always seemed to get the better of you? Were you fighting for self-respect after a loss, or trying to prove to others how good you are? Sure, you couldn't really control what they thought, but that doesn't mean you didn't try. While revenge in life is usually directed at a person, in trading, it's not like there's someone specific you can get back at. You're often fighting the whole market. Logic and reason have been overrun by the strength of your anger. As inexplicable as your actions may be, the post-blow-up self-criticism rarely solves the problem. You instead need to understand the reason you seek revenge. Revenge trading is unlike the three types of tilt covered earlier in this chapter, because the source is not just anger. Instead, the secret ingredient mixed into revenge trading is a confidence problem. The two seemingly explode when they come together, and that's how the intensity that characterizes revenge is created. On the anger side, look out for a hatred of losing, mistake tilt, or injustice tilt. But if you have any of those tilt issues independent of a problem with confidence, you won't seek revenge. Even if you don't think you have a confidence issue, try not to make any judgments until after you've read the next chapter. While you'll learn significantly more about confidence in the next chapter, it's important to point out that confidence is not an all-or-nothing proposition. You don't have it or not have it. Confidence has a number of dimensions, like pieces to a puzzle. Weakness in one small area, such as an excessive desire for respect, being overly focused on results, or maintaining the illusion of control, when mixed with anger, is enough to spark revenge. You may see this as you complete your map of tilt. For example, you may recognize that levels 1, 2, and 3 are actually related to confidence, where you become overconfident after seeing a number of positions in the green, but then anger is triggered after they appear to unjustly turn into losses. Or perhaps it's the opposite, where the lower levels are marked by anger, and a mixture of revenge and desperation, a confidence issue, come in at levels 6 through 10. Either way, to solve revenge trading, you need to understand and correct the roots of both the anger and the confidence issues. Revenge trading can be a problem even for 20-year Wall Street veterans. Joe is currently an independent trader from New York City, with years of experience trading and working at a bulge bracket investment bank before going out on his own 5 years ago. His background is heavily weighted towards options and higher periodicity training that he managed as a rolling 20 to 60 day portfolio. On his own, however, Joe became increasingly focused on adding an intraday futures trading vertical to his existing strategies, and this change led to a lot of anger that impacted his subsequent performance. With options trading, Joe could have, for example, 30 positions open over a rolling 30-day period, and if one blew up, it wasn't a big deal, because he was managing the risk over a larger portfolio of complementary positions that tended to offset one another to differing degrees. Managing a strategic book like that had been his bread and butter for years. But now trading intraday futures on a directional basis, he was overly hung up on the outcomes of individual trades, where any single trade might be the only active position. He would mess around with trades, cutting them short of his target, and became hyper-focused on the outcome of each individual trade at the expense of the overarching process. When the market would stall out in an area in which he expected it to move swiftly through, Joe would often immediately get out before the loss got larger. Then if it ultimately went in his direction, he would think about how unlucky he was, feeling like the market, including algorithmic market makers, was out to get him or toying with him. In his mind, he would get everything right to the exact tick he wanted, and then suddenly, for example, the trade wouldn't fill, despite hitting his bid or lifting into his offer, because the market would turn right on that price. It was incredibly frustrating. Then, with residual feelings of FOMO, he'd be inclined to enter at a slightly less favorable price only to get stopped out, and then possibly forced back into the trade again when that stop appeared to be too tight. Although he was always managing risk, he still might do that 2 to 4 more times before recognizing he was on tilt and walking away. Having reactions like that made his head explode. Joe couldn't comprehend how he could think like that when intellectually he knew that the market was never out to get a single trader and is largely indifferent to the intentions of the participants, but those types of situations still sparked a deep desire to get the next trade right. Joe also wanted to be right not for the sake of money, but because he prided himself on his skill and abilities. And when he was wrong, like when he read too much into price action and believed he could predict what was going to happen next, his confidence would take a hit. Bad predictions were a primary reason he curtailed winners, rationalizing to himself, "Oh, you're wrong again? Look at the flow going against you. You better get out of this trade before you take another full loss." Then at other times, he would book small wins just so he could feel good. Joe couldn't understand why he was screwing up. He got pissed off at himself and at the market. This mixture of injustice tilt, mistake tilt, and the need to be right, a flaw in his confidence, sparked revenge. He became impulsive and vengeful towards the market. He would overtrade, taking the same trade over and over again after he got stopped out prematurely. As he doesn't use hard stops, this gray area was the perfect rationale his revenge needed to get back in, thinking, "I'm not letting the market stop me out at the very high low of this retracement. I'm going to get this trade right." Joe was very aware of the revenge problem and even kept detailed stats, tracking what he did and what each trade would have done if he had left it alone. Over the most recent 3-year period, he was generating an R factor of around 1.5, but it could have been 2 to 2.5 had he managed to remain more objective in his management. He was easily losing a full third of his available profit potential. Through our discussion, which is summarized in the following mental hand history, you can see how the underlying flaws cause so much chaos. 1. What's the problem? I have a lot of experience in this business, and even though I know losing is an integral part of the game, I get myopic when trading the intraday timeframe. I'm just not seeing the winners and losers as a collective process, and I'm only seeing this one trade, this single outcome as a standalone occurrence. When it goes against me or something unexpected happens, I can lose my composure and interfere with the trade. 2. Why does this problem exist? I'm convinced I know exactly how the trade is going to play out, that it's going to immediately break out or reverse. But when long and I see sellers come in, for example, and it stalls, I second guess my premise and lose trust in my judgment. I feel like I should get out of the trade, even though I know it doesn't unfold the same way every time, that it's inherently unpredictable, and that I have the hard proof of that in my data. 3. What is flawed? I'm holding on to this unreasonable expectation, and I have a hard time seeing that this trade could be one of the 50% or so that unfolds in a different way. The expectation that it should work out exactly how I anticipate is overriding my ability to see the process objectively. I can become so drawn up in my reading of the order flow that I'm almost fooling myself that I can predict what's going to happen next. Plus, there's a part of me that wants to win all the time. I want to be that good. Maybe I can't get 10 out of 10, but I believe that I have the knowledge and experience to get 8 out of 10. I simply want to be that good. It's driving me to hold on to something that's unrealistic.